Please be advised that this presentation was recorded live on March 10th, 2020, and may not include information and data that factors in the COVID-19 global pandemic and its economic impacts.
Here today to discuss the Hampton Roads industrial market is Bill Throne, First Vice President and Ports and Intermodal Advisory Group co-lead at Thalhimer, Cushman & Wakefield. Welcome, Bill.
Thank you, Larry, and thank you all for coming out. I know it's good to be with a group of people again. It really is fun. I'm glad you came. Looking around the room, I did want to say thank you to so many of you who have done business with me, and it's a fun community to be in. I'm glad you're here, and really over the years, it's been great. I'm feeling really good, I think, because for the first time in many years, I've been able to do a really positive report on the industrial market. Honestly, I don't think we've seen a better year for industrial since other than 2019, since the last 25 years for certain, that's for sure. This is sort of a plucked from the first page of the report you'll get later on, and really what it wants to bring forward, and Deborah and I were talking about this a minute ago, when you write this report, you kind of wake up at some point and you say, wow, every major driver of industrial demand in the market is positive. It's like they all were hitting on cylinders this year, and it resulted in a great, great year for us. I think vacancy rate for the market finished off, according to CoStar, at 2.5%. And I think that's enough to celebrate right there, but I think it is. It's an indication of how things really have been going well. And in the port itself, if we use that maybe as the starting point to our discussion today, to push almost 3 million TEUs through the port is a phenomenal accomplishment. In 1995, again, 25-year anniversary, and to speak to the most transformational project in the region, I don't think there's any question that the port would have to fit that bill. It is a major driver of who we are, what we do, what we see every day, where we boat, where we play, and where many of us work. And for them to push 3 million TEUs through the port's phenomenal. In 1995, at the beginning, we were just about 1 million TEUs for the area. So we've tripled that volume over the last 25 years. In 2003, the TEU volume numbers were about 1.6 million TEUs, and things have accelerated ever since there. So as a transformational project, I think what it really will help us do today, and my theme really is, how did we get here? If we're saying that this is the best that it's been, it's important for us to look back and maybe relish where we are, and that helps us in making projections moving forward. Container terminal traffic through the port started really in 1956. It's a fun factoid to think of this fellow Malcolm McLean, and he's a North Carolina native, owned a trucking company, had a vision for the container for intermodal transport. He realized that loading and unloading by hand, whether it's stevedoring or stuffing boxes in the back of trucks, it's an inefficient way to move product. And so he came with this idea, designed a ship for it, launched one in 1956. And that's the year of my birth, so I'm going to say I'm a baby of Malcolm McLean as well, at least for what I do every single day, which is awesome. And that's compared, of course, to one of the largest container ships up there we currently push, 20,000 containers on each one of these ships there. So the volumes that we've come through the ports around the world continues to increase. And it's been a steady increase in container volumes from the inception, and we don't see really any slowdown from a global trend, coronavirus notwithstanding. And honestly, that is the elephant in the room. All of us will address it. For us in the supply chain world, it's going to have a significant impact. But at best, I'm hopeful that it's a short-term disruption in supply chain, reconfiguration of supply chain. But that being said, it takes nothing away from the port and its importance to us here in the Hampton Roads region. It is clearly the most transformational project. Give you a little history besides the fact that container involved in 1956. In the modern era, if you will, we had a couple of neat things happen. In 2003, A.P. Moller, Maersk came to the market and they purchased the Cox property over in Portsmouth. There were three terminals at the time, and they're all operated by the state of Virginia, Portsmouth Marine Terminal, Newport News, and of course, Norfolk International. This added a fourth, and Maersk's design was to create the most advanced computerized terminal in the United States, which they ultimately did. And so that was a really big deal because it showed how important the Port of Virginia really is to have an international shipping container company or a shipping company come to our city, our region here, and make a decision to invest that heavily tells us that this is a great port to be at. Now, a little later on, 2009, a couple things happened on the way to the recession, and one of them was that Port wasn't doing well. The Commonwealth of Virginia was struggling as well, and CenterPoint, who is developing 900 acres in Suffolk, Virginia, made a proposal to purchase the Port of Virginia, privatize the port terminals. Not unusual. It happens around the country and around the globe. There are many private ports. But it really made business leaders and political leaders stop for a minute and ask themselves the question of how important is the port to the state, the Commonwealth of Virginia, to the region itself. And I think the conclusion they came to was it's a crown jewel. It is a transformational property, a transformational asset for the Commonwealth of Virginia, and we need not be short-sighted and sell this to the benefit of private equity. We made the decision to hold on to it, and then the next step in this process of evolving into this a world-class port was we hired John Reinhart in 2013 to manage the Port of Virginia. Now, he had a private industry background, and prior to his hire, the port was actually bleeding revenue. It was not doing well. It was looked at by the Commonwealth as an economic development asset. It would generate additional business. We could offer it to clients as something that we had in the Commonwealth, but it wasn't considered to be a profit center. It wasn't run really to full profit potential. Enter John Reinhart, and things have been going great ever since. He continues to transform the market with his wonderful staff over there at the Port Authority. It's all not John. There's a lot of people who are involved and engaged over there, and many of you might even be in the room here. Thank you for all that you do. It's made a huge difference in all of our lives. In 2019, they kind of went public with this idea of diversifying what comes through the port and kind of what we can do besides just bring in containers. And certainly, USDA granted us a in-transit cold storage capacity here, fruits, vegetables, and as a result of that, the Port of Virginia made a decision to really pursue that. And the end result was that Preferred Freezer, now purchased by Lineage Logistics, bought land and they're constructing a 200,000 square foot cold storage facility just outside the gate at Virginia International Gateway. And again, a real testament to our market here. I've had other cold storage operators come through the market. They see the value in it. It's a great location. The port will continue to transform us on the industrial side here. Another big thing in the news is offshore wind. We're all aware of what's going to happen down in the next 2 years or so. Ørsted has a contract to construct two test turbines off the coast of Virginia, and that will test whether or not it's an area that's ripe for offshore wind. Most people think that it is, and in the next decade, it's likely we'll have offshore wind farms out there generating a significant portion of our energy here in the Commonwealth. That's an exciting thing. All of this because the port transformed this region by utilizing these waterfront assets that we have here, and we've got to be grateful for that. Now, I think one of the things that offshore wind is going to do for us, and maybe in a negative sense, is it's going to tax already our maritime industry. And whether you know it or not, the shipyard industry here, we have the largest conglomeration of ship repair and construction facilities in the United States in Hampton Roads. We have Huntington Ingalls, which is clearly the largest ship repair and construction company in the country. Major influence on our region. And again, as far as transforming who we are, it's having a significant impact on everyone in Hampton Roads because of the work that they do there. Maritime work has been around longer than the country. This is a great picture there of the Norfolk Shipyard in Portsmouth, and actually in 1767 was when we first started working on ships in the colonies here. And since then, it has had a huge influence on what happens in the Commonwealth. Huntington Ingalls continues. Deborah's already referenced the two carrier buy, followed by participation in a submarine purchasing program. There's a lot of work to be done. This represents a projections by the Mid-Atlantic Regional Maintenance Center in terms of the man days that will be required to meet all of the Navy requirements to help repair ships in our area here. Now, Dr. Agarwal made an interesting point. He did say that the region does have an identity. It is in ship repair. Ship repair is a big part of it. I'll come back to Dr. Agarwal's comment in a second here. But this really is who we are. Government funding, that was the thing that he brought up. Clearly with the current president, we've got a drive for 355 ships. That has really influenced folks in the Pentagon who are signing for budgets. And we expect that's gonna continue in the next few years, that we will continue to see more government spending here, and that's gonna have a positive influence in our marketplace. It's interesting, you'll see the numbers up there are fascinating. In 2020, there's 1.6 million man days that are projected to be needed by the ship repair industry. That grows to 1.7 in 2021, a small hiatus back down to 1.6 in 22, then in 23, it launches itself up to 2 million man days. The thing that's interesting about this chart is you can see the green dashed line that runs across and then the black dashed line. Those represent capacities in terms of the amount of manpower we have in the marketplace. The green one is the actual capacity that we have here, and the black one is surge capacity, ultimately how many we can really push if we utilize every asset we've got here. And just in maritime ship repair demand, you can see by 2023-24, we're going to be out of capacity or exceeding. The demand is going to be there. It's a great time to be in the ship repair industry. Again, if you have people that are looking for work, I urge you, contact the Virginia Ship Repair Association. They'll find a job for you. The local market was influenced by this, of course. This comes from the fourth quarter survey for Hampton Roads, and you can see on the peninsula, with the exception of Gloucester, we are really driving vacancy rates down. Each one of these submarkets is less than 3%, and just like Deborah had suggested with regard to office requirements on the peninsula, industrial demand is high for companies that are either associated with or dealing directly with Huntington Ingalls and other ship repair association companies in the Hampton Roads region. Speaking of the local market, 2.5% is pretty healthy. 757 is our new branding, so I couldn't resist. I put it into the program here, as Deborah did as well. Whether it sticks or not, we'll find out. But at 2.5%, we're in a great spot, and how did we get there? I dug this up. I found it in my old files, which I think is really cool. I like this historical stuff. And you can see from 1991 all the way through to 2007 that our vacancy rate has never been at 2.5% before. So this substantiated what I thought was we really had a great year in 2019. How did we get there? Well, I think one of the reasons we got down to 2.5%, you can see the decline from 2016 to 2019. It has to do, believe it or not, with a lack of new product. This is another chart that I plucked out historically, and you can see that first quarter of 2015, the total inventory in Hampton Roads is 115 million square feet. We added 1.7% over 5 years, which is certainly not robust. And to end up at 119 million square feet, according to CoStar, in terms of total inventory on the industrial side, we've seen incremental as the economy's done better. By nature, our businesses have added more space and more space. All it really has done is gobbled up the amount of vacant space that we have as a natural progression of growth in the marketplace here. It's certainly not a direct result of some outside stimulus. And one of those stimulus would be population growth. We're not seeing a real influx of migration to the region here. And so as a consequence, even though vacancy rate is declining here, we're still not seeing really robust demand that would come as a result of additional population growth. Prices are rising, though. I think on the local side of things, this gives you a historical idea of what pricing has done for this one sample building in Airport Industrial Park. And it's nice if you're an investor to see you could have purchased this property for $630,000 in 2000, and here we'd be 10 years later, and you're probably looking at selling that same asset for $55 a square foot based on what kind of increases we've had over the years. That's a pretty healthy return. So the market is good on the investment side of things, and we've seen quite a few people continue to look in the market to invest in industrial. In fact, it's kind of a preferred class for this very reason. Limited stock. Not a lot of competition with new building out there. High demand, low vacancy rates. If you have an opportunity to buy an industrial building in a well-placed market, my recommendation would be to consider buying it. All right. How did we get here? What part of the market actually did grow? If it's not this indigenous industrial real estate, it has to be big box. I don't think I've ever had this happen, but my little news feed tweet came over my phone. You probably got the same one making the announcement about Amazon in Chesapeake and Suffolk. Maybe you turned your phone off. I see a couple people out there looking at their phones right now. The governor made the announcement today that in Chesapeake, Virginia, Amazon is going to construct a 650,000 square foot cross-dock facility. In Suffolk, Virginia, in Northgate Industrial Park, Amazon's going to construct a 3.8 million square foot 90-foot tall building, multiple story, to have it be robot picking, most modern building that you can imagine for Amazon constructing in the market. So really new to our market in the big box genre, if you will, you can add another 4.5 million square feet to the space we have already. That's fascinating. Not just that, but I think we're going to start to see increased interest in the market from other companies who are looking for some place that they can take advantage of the positive aspects of the Port of Virginia, which we've already covered. Port selections become more and more critical, not just with Amazon, but big boxes are coming to our area because the Port of Virginia is getting a favorable review from consultants, not just real estate consultants, but logistics consultants as well. I attend a certified supply chain management professional conference every year, and when they have the vendors out in the hallway, you know, at all these conferences, they want to sell you what they have. Over 50% of those vendors are computer programs to show you how to maximize the profit in your supply chain. What shipping companies to use? All of these are soft companies that are trying to tell us how to go ahead and maximize the supply chain that they've got. Lamasoft for years has gone ahead and created a program that does just that. They're used by relocation and siting professionals around the country. And you can see from this quite graphic, they're bragging about what they're doing. And you can see looking at their offset there, the old system that they had for this one client had distributors and wholesalers handling their product. Down below, the new system, the future state of the end-to-end OEM managed part distribution process, added managed centralized storing by the client and regional DCs for distribution to the dealers after that. This reflects the just-in-time mentality of every component of industrial real estate nowadays. And every time you shorten the supply chain, you add demand for more additional product. Other companies on the physical side, for the real estate side, look at this. They take that data, that information, and they make an analysis and determine which one is the best port of entry. St. Ange here works for Dollar Tree. They're in partnership with Cushman & Wakefield. We see these analyses all the time. And I'm here to tell you that the good news is that if you've got a company that has a 3DC model, generally speaking, West Coast, East Coast, Gulf Coast perhaps, we tend to come out on top. If it's not a speed-to-market kind of a product, the Port of Virginia always scores very favorably, and we'll continue to see more and more interest in this market for those kinds of companies. Some of the analysis are shown there on the screen that they look at, certainly in the number of employees that are there, dray cost, infrastructure, competition in the market for those employees are all critical components to go into that beyond just the real estate, the cost per square foot, which as you'd imagine is low in comparison to the actual supply chain cost from manufacturing all the way to the end consumer. So in 2020, where are we going? Well, it's a short-term bump, that's for sure, when we talk about the coronavirus. And I think we're all, you know, we'll regret ever having said that word, heard that word, and hopefully it'll be a distant memory here and not too long, but who knows. It has really disrupted supply chain. And if you've got places in China where they're manufacturing a bumper for a car, or they're putting an axle for a tractor, or they're doing anything else that has to do with an end production user, and they're keeping people at home, they're not making that product, and they're not putting it on a ship, and it's not making its way across the ocean, and it's not landing here in Virginia, and it's not supplying a warehouse somewhere. So we don't want this to continue. We want it over as soon as we can possibly be there. And I know there's not much we can do except for hope, but here we go. I've got a couple different predictions for you. And if I can be better than the weatherman and get 50% of them right, I'm going to throw them up there. We'll see what we can do. Trump wins a second term is my first prediction. Now, politics completely aside, his view of a 355-ship Navy only benefits our market here. Traditionally, you have conservatives in office. They favor a strong defense budget. And as Dr. Agarwal so accurately pointed out, that's always good for us. Not trying to sway your vote, tell you how to think about things, but I think for me, Trump wins a second term in 2020. That's my prediction for the following year. Virginia wins back-to-back national titles in basketball. Isn't that exciting? That's my other prediction for your UV. I don't know why we're laughing. That should be a sign of we should be joyful about that, right? I think Virginia's got a good shot. I enjoy watching it. I think it's important for us. I think that we talked before about in-migration not being as robust as we would like it to be. And I think at a national level, when you have, whether it's Old Dominion University or Virginia Tech, or whether it has to be Hampton University or the University of Virginia, this all helps us here in Virginia. We're trying to bring young people back. We want to make this a vibrant community and embrace these different schools. Look, I hope UVA goes all the way. And I think it can only be good for us in the region here to see them win another national championship. Amazon crushes the market with new DCs. Wow, I wrote that like I don't even know how long ago, and here it happened today, so I'm already somewhere close to 50%. And then my last prediction is it'll be a very good year for the industrial market in 2020. So I don't know what you think about the first two, but the second two I'm confident are going to be correct, and I thank you so much for your attention, and we look forward to a great 2020.
Thank you, Bill.